Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
About 30 years ago, Ricky Skaggs had a country western hit called Highway 40 Blues. Our guests tonight are Andrew and Brad, two Advantage players who have an interesting story to tell about being stopped on Highway I-40 in Oklahoma by the police while carrying a significant amount of money. Before we get to them, we received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com concerning lines of credit. It turns out I read the question differently than Richard did. He reached out to the original emailer, and it turns out that Richard was correct in his interpretation, since the way I interpreted the question also makes for relevant information on the show. We're going to answer that first, and then we'll get to the way the emailer really wanted the question. The question was, assuming you take out a marker from a casino and don't pay it back at the end of your trip, how soon can the casino submit that marker to your bank? And the legal answer is whatever you have agreed to. When you're signing up for a line of credit, one of the boxes to check is how long do you want the money for? I always put 30 days, which has never been a problem, but there are boxes to check for end of trip, 1 week, 2 weeks, etc. So let's say you've checked the 30-day box. If your account is unpaid on day 31, the casino has every right to submit it to your bank. Whether they actually do that or not depends on the casino policy. Sometimes they'll give you a phone call or send you a letter before submitting the marker for collection. Sometimes they won't. Part of this depends on your history with that casino. Almost always, if you call them up a week ahead and say, I'm in a bit of an awkward situation right now, I can pay half the money immediately and would like an extra 15 to 20 days to pay off the rest, they're going to agree with that. They don't have to, but they will. They want to keep you as a customer in good standing. They know that submitting the marker to your bank will tend to tick you off. Now, if you owe them the money, they will assume you lost that money gambling, whether that was true or not. So they want to keep such a good customer. Now, any comment on this part of it, Richard?
Yeah, I'm curious if you, because you've marked 30 days, do you, if you have a winning trip, do you keep the money and try to make money on the float for the 30 days, or do you pay the marker off right away?
I usually pay the marker off right away. I am well enough known in that I play for high stakes that I don't really want to be going in and out of casinos with $30,000 to $50,000 in my pocket. So I'll want to come in with nothing and take out markers and then put them in safety deposit boxes or something so that I'm not going around with large amounts of money on me. So I've never been...
Well, to make money on the float, you would have to deposit it in an interest-bearing account. But interest rates are so low right now that you wouldn't make anything, really.
Yeah, and I actually have enough cash on hand in various safety deposit boxes around town that the float is sitting in an extra safety deposit box doesn't buy me anything.
No, I'm trying to get interest for you, Bob.
Thank you for your interest. All right.
But now, conversely, if you ever have a really big losing trip,
yes.
Do you say, hey, I really got buried, you know, will you take something, you know, I owe you $50,000, will you knock off 10%?
I have had that conversation some of the time, but it's tough when you're there are casinos who think that basically Bob Dancer never loses overall, and so it's tougher for me than it would be for other people, I think.
Yeah, that's probably true. So anyway, back to the original emailer.
Yes.
Yeah. So what happened to him is he took out a marker, and the casino has never cashed the check. Basically, he owes them the money, but the casino hasn't cashed the check. So he's wondering, how long does he have to wait before he can sleep at night and know that the money is really his, that the casino isn't going to collect it?
Yeah, like you'd like to know before. And if you're not going to collect it, I would rather have a 50,000 marker than only a lousy 10,000.
Right, right.
So I don't know any legal answer to that. I do know that that's not going to happen to me if I have any choice about it. I don't want any chance for the casino credit company to have a note in there that says Bob Dancer hasn't paid a marker for a year and a half. And so that would make it harder for me to get a marker next time. So I tend to pay my off.
So we'll have to ask one of the lawyers next time they're on what the statute of limitations is for them to be able to collect that.
Yeah, and I suspect that varies by state. We received another email address to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. It seems this card counter was recently identified in the files of OSN, the Oregon Surveillance Network. He's upset about this, he wants to know if he has any recourse. Richard.
Welcome to the club. This often happens that people get really upset when they get put into a database. Many times their first reaction is, you know, I want to sue them or you know, I want to do something to get it out. Unfortunately, you can't. You know, you really have no hope. Unless they have wrongly labeled you a cheater, but OSN in particular, Bob Nersesian has been on the show and has said that OSN has been very careful not to call people cheaters. In the old days, that was very common with the Griffin book for them to label people cheaters, and that was part of the case that bankrupted them. The Grosjean case.
Uh-huh.
The good news is it's not the end of the world. Basically, every professional eventually gets put into the databases, and it doesn't mean that your playing days are over. It's just part of the business, and it's going to happen to everybody, and, you know, life goes on. It's a minor annoyance, but it's minor.
You can't call him and say, that's a really bad picture you have of me in that casino.
You know what? It's not even the pictures, because usually the pictures are really bad, like that you can't really identify people from them in many cases. The problem is your name is no longer clean, so you can no longer go use a player's card in that name. And most professionals that I know have had at least one name change, you know, some more than one.
All right. Let's talk to our guest. Andrew and Brad are Minnesota Advantage players who've recently played in Oklahoma. While they were in Oklahoma, they got pulled over by the Highway Patrol on I-40. That's the primary reason they're here tonight to talk about this. Andrew and Brad, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having us.
That was Brad.
And Andrew.
And that was Andrew. And we'll assume Andrew said thank you. Okay, so you have 10 minutes to tell your I-40 story. Assume that Munch and I will rudely interrupt you periodically, so that'll stretch out to 15 minutes. Go.
Sure, I'll start us off here. So, like we said, me and Brad are from the Upper Midwest, and we had decided to take a gambling trip down to Oklahoma. And at this day, we were on day 4 of day 5 of our trip. And for any listeners that aren't familiar with Interstate 40 in particular, it's commonly known as one of the largest drug trafficking corridors in the country. And police are very happy to pull over out-of-state license plates, try to search your car for any reason they can possibly think of. And just to give you maybe some more background on Interstate 40, cars that are pulled over going westbound toward Los Angeles, cops are normally looking for drug money. Cars that are pulled over going eastbound, cops are normally looking for drugs. So the precursor to our story is the night before our incident, we were actually driving westbound on Interstate 40. And a cop car was shining their flashlight on every car that was passing by, every license plate. And we knew what was going on. We're like, okay, they're looking for out-of-state license plates. They happened to shine their flashlight on our license plate, but did not pull us over. But we realized at that point that we were very likely to be pulled over down here. And it was from that point that we were prepared that, like, okay, we need to think about what we're going to do in case this happens. You know, I had followed Richard's blog for a while where he had talked about Interstate 40 events. So I was familiar with what the possibilities were of what could possibly happen. So we did take some precautionary measures before the trip started in case something like this would happen.
What kind of precautionary measures?
Well, we'll get there. I think it'll make for a better story if we wait until the incident.
By the way, a thought just occurred to me, and I don't know why I hadn't thought of this before, but you were in a rental car, right?
Oh, we were not in a rental car. No. We were in our own car.
Yeah. Oh. So I was just thinking, you know, next time I fly into a state like that, I will insist that I get a rental car with local plates.
In hindsight, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right. As I said, we rudely interrupt. Go ahead, Brett. Andrew. All right.
So like Andrew had said, you know, we woke up that morning. We were an hour west of Oklahoma City, traveling east for the day. So like we'd already done several thousand miles in the state. You know, again, rental car might have been cheaper. I don't know. But kind of like Andrew mentioned the night before, we had seen the flashlights on the license plates. So yeah, we were throwing caution to the wind. So, I mean, it really didn't take very long of us being on the interstate before, you know, we saw our first patrol car, you know, maybe 10 to 20 minutes that day. So he was in the median, and like Andrew had said, we were being cautious. So I was going the speed limit, you know, intentionally not trying to get pulled over. But the second we had passed the car in the median, he instantly pulled out. So I think... And Andrew's direct quote was, "Here we go." Like, I think Andrew is being much less naive than I was at that point in time. You know, I would like to think, oh, they're just, you know, they're pulling out. It was a coincidence. It wasn't that they'd seen our license plate at this time, right? Like, we're fine. It turned out that had not been the case. So what ended up happening, though, was the cop pulled out, and he passed us. Because, like I said, I was going the speed limit. Most people in Oklahoma do not go the speed limit. So he was going with traffic. He was going faster than traffic. So he'd passed us on the left. After he'd passed us, he then slowed down to a crawl. Like, he was going 50 miles an hour in a 65. And basically was forcing my hand to pass him, is kind of what I saw. So I signaled, got in the left lane, passed him. The second I got past him, he threw on his lights. So, like... great, you know, like, I knew I hadn't been speeding. I knew I had signaled. So, like, you know, what had I possibly done at this point in time? And so, like, I've been pulled over before for speeding. So, like, I've had interactions with police officers before. And, like, I kind of know the usual interaction is, hey, how you doing? You were going a little fast back there. Can I see your ID, your proof of insurance? I'm going to go back into my squad car, look all this up. You know, I'll be right back. This was not the case for us in Oklahoma. So what ended up happening was, it was, hey, how you doing? Can I see your ID and your insurance? And can you walk back with me to my squad car? So, you know.
He didn't say, do you know why I pulled you over, or I pulled you over for nothing? Just
nope. It was, hey, let's take a walk.
It was immediately an isolation attempt to get me to have me in one car and Brad in another car to begin questioning us.
Right,
cross-examining
us. Which obviously we didn't know at the time, but, you know, in hindsight, that's exactly what they were doing. So, you know, I'm sitting shotgun in the passenger seat of the cop car. Cop number two was talking to Andrew this time, which Andrew will talk about in a little bit here. But I get in the passenger seat, and instantly the officer says, this starts writing down my info, and he says, so when you were lane changing back there, you ended up cutting off a semi-truck. You know, they sit pretty high. You kind of cut in front of him a little bit, didn't give him enough room to react, which I don't know if my initial thought was, what semi-truck? Or, like, what are you talking about? But, I mean, certainly, like, I did not cut off a semi. I can guarantee you that, you know. If anything, I was speeding a little bit, maybe. But, I didn't cut off a semi. So, like, in the back of my mind, like, I think it's completely a lie. But, like... you know, I come off, and then he says, but I'm giving you a warning. So, you know, I come off, okay, that's great. I think naively, I think maybe this is just the end of it. You know, Kyle's being a nice guy. You cut off that semi back there, but we're going to let you go. That was also not the case. So he kind of follows up casually, and he starts off really buddy-buddy with me. And he kind of is prodding the whole time. I would call it just like a – he was prodding pretty much the whole time. So, like, he just casually asks why we're in the state. And so, you know, I'm honest to him because we had kind of talked about this before where it's like if we get pulled over, you know, we have nothing to hide. So let's be honest with these guys. So we were in the state casino hopping. You know, we had to this point, you know, Andrew mentioned we had been here 4 days already. So we had been in 40 or 50 casinos to that point in time. You know, and so that we were honest. And then it was kind of around this time where the second cop who had been talking to Andrew earlier came back into the car and then was asking me questions from the back seat, which I think I learned out later that these are the questions he had asked Andrew, and he was cross-referencing to see if I would supply the same answers. So, you know, it was, where are you coming from? How much money do you need while you're going to all these casinos? What do you do for a living? What does Andrew do for a living? So, like, again, they're prodding, trying to divide and conquer, I think. Like, one of us would come out and say something stupid like, oh, yes, I'm a drug dealer. Arrest me now. You know? but this was certainly not the case. But then the tough question came, do you have more than $5,000 in the car? So I knew I did, but we had kind of heard all these horror stories about I-40 and about civil forfeiture in general. So, I mean, in hindsight, I don't know if I should have just said no comment, but I made a judgment call and said, you know, no, we don't.
Like, our approach from the very beginning was to avoid a search at any cost. Right. You know, I had read about these incidents. I was like, oh, these guys probably just didn't know what they were doing. You know, just don't consent to a search and it'll be fine. Don't admit to anything and it'll all be fine, right?
Right. So I guess you want to talk about what Cop 2 is asking you about?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, while Brad's getting questioned, I'm getting asked a lot of the same questions, you know. The first question I get is like, oh, hey, have you been up driving all night? You know, a.k.a., oh, did you guys leave, Los Angeles last night with a boatload of drugs? And it's like, no, we've been driving for 10 minutes. You know, where are you guys coming from? Oh, we've been touring casinos in the state for the last 4 days. Like, oh, you know, like, it's a weird answer, and I understand, like, they're showing a lot of skepticism. You know, what do you do for a living? Do you have your license? Have you ever been in trouble with the law?
Now, when he asked, what do you do for a living, did you say we're professional gamblers?
Oh, we did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I hold a day job, too, so I'm like, I work for an investment firm, but I'm also a professional gambler. Brad's a professional gambler. Also, that's not a great answer in the eyes of the police. They're just kind of like, you know, what does that mean? But I guess, I mean, the real interesting one comes down to when you were getting interrogated to about the search. And
right. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, Cop 1 was trying to be buddy-buddy with me, like, the whole time. Like, he was trying to be buddy-buddy, but was still very obviously prodding. So, like, almost off the cuff, he asked me, like, oh, hey, like, you know, since we're here almost, do you mind if I search your car? And so, like, having, again, read about these things, my answer was no, not unless you have a warrant. And he said, oh, okay, yeah, I understand. But do you mind if I have my drug dog sniff around the car? And I guess I can mention that we were pulled over by a canine unit, which I didn't realize until this point either. And again, I said, you know, don't you need a warrant to do that? And he said, well, no, not really. You don't have protection around your car. So I said, well, you know, aren't you just going to do it anyway, take your dog around in my car? And he said, yes. So, that's exactly what he did. He sent the dog around the car. And so, like, I don't know what a drug dog is supposed to do when it's sniffing around a car, but it sniffed the passenger side and then, like, kind of worked its way around the back and then went to the side of the car and sat down. And so apparently this means that the dog smelled something. So Cop 1 comes back with his dog to the car, and he says, my dog smelled something. Okay, sure, all right, whatever. I don't think that was the case, but okay. And so this started a whole new line of questioning, right? So it was...
You didn't say your dog's a big fat liar?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would have loved to have said that, sure. And I think Andrew can tell you something about that here in a little bit. But so the new line of questioning now, because this dog had, I don't know if he actually smelled something or if whatever the case was, it was, you know, now do you have any, like, weapons or drugs in the car? Or is there anything that we should know about in the car? Or, like, you know, it's okay if you have just, like, a little bit of marijuana in the car. Like, just tell me about it now. You know, it'll be fine.
Yeah, and just so, a little heroin, yeah, yes, no, like, problem.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, again, buddy, it'll be okay. And so I said, you know, I say no to all these questions. Like, we don't have any guns or drugs or anything like that. And so, you know, this is the point where he's like, okay, well, you know, I've called my backup. We're gonna search your car. And so I think I'll have Andrew take it over from here.
Sure. So I was still sitting in our car when they told Brad that they were going to search our car. So the second cop comes up to me. He's like, Andrew, our dog detected something in your car. We're going to be searching it. And I immediately snapped back with, no, it didn't. And, I mean, I knew where this was going, so, like, I was not happy at all because I knew exactly what was going to happen here. They were going to find a bunch of cash. We were going to lose it forever. So I was definitely losing my patience at this point. And the cop snaps back, like, oh, are you a drug dog expert? I'm like, well, no, but I know you just made that up. And he's like, get out of the car. And, you know, at this point, I'm just like, all right, this is it. So I might as well just say what's on my mind here. And I'm just like, you know, this is complete BS. Like, you just pulled us over for no reason. And you just made up some, you know, reason to say that your dog smelled drugs so that you can search our car. And he's like, hey, we pulled your buddy over for a legit traffic violation, which we've already explained to him back in the car. You know, and if you don't start cooperating, like, you're going to have a bunch of other problems on your hands. So, you know, at that point, I'm just like, okay, whatever. And they're like, is there anything we should know about in the car before we search it? I'm like, no. And he's like, okay, go have a seat in the squad car. So at this point, me and Brad are sitting in the back of the squad car as these two guys start searching our car. So right before we got pulled over, we had shoved $15,000 in cash in our glove box. And the very first thing that these guys do when they start searching our car is they open the glove box. So they open the glove box, they find a bunch of cash after we had just told them that, well, Brad had just told them that we didn't have over $5,000 in cash in the car. And so we were off to a bad start. And that immediately elevated everything. And, you know, you could just see it in the cops' eyes that they just thought they, you know, this was the best excitement they've had all day. They call in all their buddies. You know, they think they're going to have this big bust or whatever. And so the eight to ten other cops descend on the scene. And the first cop comes back, you know, kicks me out of the squad car because he wants to interrogate Brad, because Brad was the one that said that we didn't have over $5,000 in cash in the car. And so I guess I'll turn back over to Brad and he can talk about what question he was getting.
Sure. So as you can probably guess, previously buddy cop was less buddy now that after he had found out that I was not telling the truth about the money in the car. So obviously the first question was, so you have more than $5,000 in the car. Why didn't you tell me before? And I think my response was something along the lines of, because I don't have to, which I mean, he didn't really take as a great answer. I think
my answer would have been, because I've heard so many stories of police stealing people's money.
Sure, and I know at one point in time, Andrew...
No, we said that to
Andrew
him.
Said that to him. So, I mean, yeah, and that's kind of in the back of my mind, that's exactly what we're both thinking about, is we're trying to avoid you just confiscating our money for absolutely no reason, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I said, because I, you know, I don't have to tell you. And so, you know, he starts asking me, like, you realize why this makes me suspicious, and, like, you understand why we're pulling you over, and you understand what we're doing right now, and, like, you understand, you know, basically why we're being so hard on you right now. And it's like, I mean, kind of, I think I understand why you think you're doing it, but, you know, this is kind of a tough spot for us. And so he just keeps asking me questions. Again, me and Andrew are separated at this point, so it's divide and conquer and hope that one of us screws up. So it was, you know, how much money do you have in the car? Whose money is it? Do you have a bank receipt for all this money that you have in the car?
Yeah, bank receipts. Yeah. Like, what bank ever gives you a receipt for withdrawing money?
I don't know.
Well, if you've ever tried to withdraw large amounts of cash from a bank, it's not necessarily easy either.
Well, yeah. First, yeah, you're right. Most banks don't even have that much cash, but I've never heard of a bank giving you a receipt for withdrawing money.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah. And so, again, he, you know, he keeps asking me, he keeps basically asking me over, but in different ways, are there any drugs in the car? You know, and I don't know how many times I can say no until I just don't care. I just, unconditional no. So at this point, several other cops had shown up, and Andrew was outside talking to the other cops, so I think I'll have him right. talk about this.
So while Brad was getting interrogated, I actually got to step outside of the cop car, and I could listen, and I got to watch, you know, these 8 to 10 cops search our car. So, you know, after they found, like, $15,000 in our glove box, they start going through all of our stuff, and they found some interesting things. And I watched them proceed to pull out, you know, a copy of Beyond Counting Exhibit CAA. The cop, you know, pulls out this big black book, starts, you know, rifling through all the pages. I think he thought he was going to find, like, some hidden compartment with a bunch of drugs or something. Another cop found a copy of Wong's sharp sports betting.
For Oklahoma?
That was my recreational right, read. I just happened to have it in the car. At the time.
Right. They found, you know, before we went on this trip, we created this big binder with all of, like, our scouting notes on Oklahoma before we went down there. You know, we knew there was, like, 97 casinos down there. We created one page for every single casino, just like a checklist of, like, as we're scouting each of these places, the things that we wanted to look at. So we were on day 4 of this trip. So by that time, we had been to probably 40 or 50 places in Oklahoma. And, you know, they pull off this big binder, which they probably thought was going to be a big list of drug dealers or something, and they start rifling through it, and they're looking at all of our notes on these different casinos in Oklahoma, and a lot of these guys were familiar with these places, and, like, they're like, okay, like, they're very confused, like, what was going on here? You know, they find, like, all of our luggage, clothes, rifle through all that. They end up finding another $25,000 in cash. So now, in total, they had found $40,000 in cash in our car, so we were certainly fighting an uphill battle here. You know, in addition to that, probably the most important things that they also found, and these were the things that I brought with me because I had read about all these horror stories online. Munchkin talked about it in his blog so much. I brought all my gambling records for the last 3 years and a bunch of W-2Gs that I had earned over the years. Now, like, a W-2G is just like a gross winning amount. But cops don't know that. That, like, just because you got a W-2G for $4,000 doesn't mean that you're up $4,000. But I certainly use that to my advantage here, because I think I had somewhere around, like, $80,000 in W-2Gs in my car. So that came in really handy when we're trying to explain, like, where all this money is coming from, that we're gamblers. And in retrospect, these became, like, really important things, like having the Beyond Counting book, having, like, a binder of, like, all the casinos we had been to, all these casino chips, casino flyers, gambling records, W-2Gs, like, with Social Security numbers on them. And when we look back and we think those are really the most important things, like having that documentation gave us a chance, you know. And anyone else that's traveling through that area, that's definitely what we'd recommend, is having as much documentation on any amount of cash that you're carrying. So I was listening to, you know, all the cops talk, and, like, they're finding all this stuff. And, you know, some of them, like, I would hear things like, oh, yeah, we probably couldn't build a case with this. Or other cops would be like, oh, these guys are just cheats. And, like, I actually heard them say that, and I had to speak up at that point. I'm like, hey, like, we're not cheating here. Like, this is all legal. They're like, okay, yeah, we get it. but so I was doing that while Brad was getting interrogated. Then it was my turn to get interrogated. So then I step in the squad car, and I'm getting, like, asked a lot of the same questions. So the cop goes, you know, so we found a lot more than $5,000 in the car. Do you know how much money is in the car? I'm like, well, it's about $40,000. He's like, whose money is this? I'm like, $20,000 of his mine, $20,000 of his Brad's. And he's like, you know, it's like, I'm just a cop. Like, it's not illegal to have large amounts of cash, but $40,000 is a lot to me. So you realize, like, why this makes us, like, incredibly suspicious. And I'm like, sure. He's like, well, in addition, like, you guys have now lied to me twice about what's going on here. And I'm like, I haven't lied to you at all. And he's like, well, your buddy told me that you didn't have over $5,000 in cash in the car, and that there's nothing I should be worried about in the car. I'm like, well, I don't... At this point, I had no idea if, like, he was just setting me up or trying to get me admit to something. I was like, well, I don't know if he had said... I don't know if Brad said those things. But if he did, the reason he probably said that is because we've read a lot about civil forfeiture, and we've read a lot about incidences on I-40 of cops just stealing people's money without any just cause. And he's... You could tell he was just kind of, like, didn't really like that answer. But I try to make it as clear as possible that, like... I knew what was going on here, and I don't know if that helped or not. Like, my attitude probably didn't help. But showing some sort of awareness of the situation, I think, certainly didn't hurt.
All right, let's wrap this story up in about 2 minutes. We got some other questions. So the bottom line is,
carry documentation with you when you're traveling.
And you got to keep the money.
And well, yeah, to keep the money. Yeah, that's the big thing. So we, you know, after I get interrogated, the cop's like, all right, get out of the car. Like, I don't know what we're going to do with you guys. So me and Brad are waiting outside the cop car while, like, the sheriff and, you know, cop number one are debating, figuring out what they're going to do with us. And by the end of it, the other cops that had searched our car were actually pretty friendly with us. They thought what we were doing was pretty cool, asking us a bunch of questions about different casinos we had been to and whatnot. And finally, the cop gets out of the car, and in just this, like, shocked voice, he goes, well, I think we're going to let you guys go. And, like, just the way that he said it, you could just tell that, like, he never thought in his wildest dreams he would find, like, this amount of cash on...
And not keep it.
Yeah. On the largest drug trafficking corridor in the country and not keep it.
Yeah, we affected his batting average that day for sure.
And, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it just speaks to, like, we did get very lucky. Like, we could have easily run into an officer on a bad day that was just like, I wanted to keep this. But I think we also had a really strong case for what we were doing down there. And bringing a lot of intentional evidence to support that, I think, absolutely saved us a lot of hassle.
So I just want to go over lessons learned. I agree with you. Documentation seems to have been key.
Sure.
Really important to have all that documentation. But I think there are two other really big lessons here. And number one, this is not the first time I heard this. They never searched your persons. So if the money had
Correct.
Been in your pockets,
yes,
they never would have found
it. In retrospect, we should have just shoved $40,000 in our pants and said that, yeah, go ahead, search our car. They might find, like, our change for the tolls or something, and
right, and
we would have been on our way.
I mean, I wouldn't have said, go ahead, search the car. I still would have said no.
Right,
you know.
Right.
But I think the other big lesson is when the cop said, I'm not going to give you a ticket, all conversation should have stopped at that point.
Sure.
Your only question should be, am I free to go? Am I being detained? Right? And, I mean... And now he may have still said, you know what? No, you're not free to go. I'm going to search your car. And and it still may have happened. But my advice to other people would be they are not your friends when they're trying to act friendly just
that
make conversation. Yeah, you can't win in that spot.
The other thing that I think is interesting is, so we were traveling eastbound and the cops actually said this to us that, you know, this is kind of suspicious, but you guys are traveling the wrong way to have a lot of cash. Westbound, they're looking for money going toward, like, L.A., you know, Mexico. Eastbound, they were looking for drugs the whole time. And so much of our questioning was around, okay, there's money here, but where are the drugs?
Yeah.
And that's what they really were trying to get at the whole time. And that I'm not sure what would have happened if that same incident would have happened going the other way, where they're actually looking for large amounts of cash.
Yeah. So let's move on to the scouting. Unless, Bob, did you have another question?
I was going to ask about scouting.
Yeah. So this was actually kind of a heroic task. You went to all 97 casinos in Oklahoma?
We did not. At first, we weren't really sure what to expect. Like, you know, we prepared to walk into any of them to try and do any preliminary preparation in terms of figuring out what places have what. I would say of the 97 casinos there, I would say maybe like 50 of them actually are more than just slot parlors. We maybe made it to like 2/3 of them, or
I think we had 50 or so in the book. It's tough because they are kind of loose with the usage of the term casino down in Oklahoma. You know, like if you have two guys and four slot machines, you know, that's a casino. So we kind of knew right away, and even from you can look online by square footage of a casino, that'll give you a good indicator right away. If it's just going to be 10 slot machines, you know, I don't want to say it's not worth your time, but I think you can certainly focus your efforts on places that are, you know, going to have at least some variety, definitely.
And what was your takeaway? I mean, let's talk about the importance of scouting to you. I mean, you guys are full-time professionals.
Sure.
How much time do you devote to scouting, and how do you do it?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's more of a time issue or if it's just that – you know, almost all of our rewards come from scouting, right? Like, being a professional gambler without scouting is kind of like oxymoronic, right? Like, you can't, I mean, scouting's huge. We've had several stories where just stumbling through a place, you almost trip over something where it's, you didn't, right. That I mean, but you set yourself up for that opportunity to be there in the first place via scouting diligently.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is that the best opportunities are not going to just fall into your lap. Like, when people find something that's truly great, they're not going to go out and tell everyone. Like, if you want to find something really good, you need to be taking it upon yourself, whether it's, you know, pounding the pavement in a casino, networking with people, you know, doing a lot of digital scouting. Like, you, the biggest scores, you need to create them yourself, because people aren't just going to hand them to you.
Right. And now, what is digital scouting?
Well, and honestly, like, it's kind of like what I said before. Like, you can Google, you know, what's the square footage of some of these places. That would be digital scouting. And the internet's a wonderful thing, because you can find a lot about a lot of things on the internet. So, you know, the kind of stuff we look for is, like, what kind of games do they have inside of these casinos? And, like, there's various places you can look at these. But, you know, you can even look at, you know, for Bob, you can look at what kind of video poker do they have inside of all these casinos. What's the best pay table for video poker? What is the players club like for these casinos? You know, all those sort of things. You can, the deeper you dig, you can find more and more things about these places without actually stepping a single foot inside of them.
Yeah, I would say my favorite thing is just continuing to monitor all of the forums out there. So one thing I've realized over the years is there's always going to be a lot of inexperienced players that will post about things on the internet that they probably should not be posting about. They either, you know, don't care, they don't know the value of what they've found, but I mean, there's just countless examples over the years of some guy getting on a blackjack forum talking about an awesome promotion in Colorado and saying, hey, look what I found here. And then that same guy shows up, you know, 4 days later complaining that three professionals showed up and crushed his game and killed it. There's countless examples of that over the years, but it's for, like, the professional player that's looking for these opportunities, they are out there. And it's just so easy to do. You can sit in the comfort of your own home. You have, like, your links favorited bookmark. You check them out once a week, once a month,
You mentioned
a day.
That somebody posted about a game that was worth $1,000 an hour.
That actually happened a couple weeks ago. It was on a non-gambling forum. And this guy was talking about how his favorite, favorite $5 video poker machine was over $75,000. And
where it starts at $20,000.
Where it starts at $20,000. And like, me being familiar with how video poker works, I'm like, well, that's, I saw this after the fact, actually. So I didn't get to play it myself, but I knew that, like, all right, this guy doesn't really know what he just stumbled upon. As long as this pay table is not absolutely horrible, this thing is worth a lot of money. I was actually able to look it up, like, after the fact, and yeah, this guy was posting about a game that had an expected value over $1,000 an hour, and anyone could have read that forum, flown to where this was, because he told everyone everything they needed to know, and grinded away on that, you know, progressive royal until they hit it.
Any particular websites that stand out as your favorites that you're, you know, that you think really should be checked?
I mean, there's a lot of them. The ones I really like are kind of the ones that aren't just all professional gamblers, for the exact example that I just gave. I mean, the Wizard of Vegas site has tons of information on there. People are talking about a lot of different topics all the time that, you know, there's just so much user-generated content that something's bound to show up there.
One of the good things about that is that, sort of the pond is so big that people who just skim it, I mean, you have to really sort of dig through it if you're to find that nugget that might be worth something.
Yep.
All right, we got some more video poker questions to ask. Before we do, we're going to talk about our sponsors. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. Players who come a lot into the South Point in January are getting double mailers. You pick up your regular mailer amount on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, and if you do, you can pick up the same amount on Friday or Saturday. Do that all six times through the first 3 weeks, and on the fourth week, you'll receive a double mailer amount on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Now, so if you get a big mailer, this is good, and if you get a small mailer, it's not so good. Now, I play a lot of double-double bonus quick quads at the South Point, which has heaven or hell results. So my mailer's there, have ranged between $75 at the high and $10 at the low. This would be times a week, times four, and partly depending on whether it's been heaven or hell on the machine recently. So apparently it's been too close to heaven recently, so this month I only get $10, so even with the double mailers, it's not that exciting, but Bonnie gets $75, so we're doing okay there. There will be double points for video poker and five times points for slots, Martin Luther King's Day, January 19th, midnight to midnight, no limits. At the Palms, they have Friday night, 7 p.m., they have weekly drawings. Each week, winners share $10,000. You do not need to be there to win, although you do need to claim the prize by midnight or it evaporates. Five times drawing entries, Friday and Saturday evenings, 8 to midnight, and two times drawing entries, 4 to 6:30 Friday afternoon. They used to have two times entries on Sundays and Tuesdays. No more. Play for prizes, PFP, Monday through Friday. Through January 16th, get up to $175 a day Lowe's gift cards and up to $15 a day in Einstein Bagels gift cards. Beginning Monday, January 19th, being offering cards to TJ Maxx. Gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday at a rate of 0.20%. You keep your points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of different variety of games. You can sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month, $79.95 a year, which allows you to get corrections on most games. The Silver membership is cheaper than that, and this big advantage is you don't get any ads on the site, but it does not give you all the corrections. The game of the week, winners get real cash money, 100 play quick quads. A quick quad is a hand that includes a three of a kind, and the other two cards add up to the rank of the three of a kind, such as 9-9-9-5-4 or 2-2-2-ace-ace. Quick quads get paid as regular four of a kinds. Since you get so many four of a kinds, you're charged 6 coins per line instead of 5 in order to make the math work out. If you'd like to learn more about this game, you can download for free a quick guide to quick quads from videopoker.com. All right, back to our guests. You found this video poker machine that was mismarked. Now, I dream of finding video poker machines that are mismarked. What was it, and how? What had happened?
Sure. Mispriced video poker tables are one of those things that I've always read about on the internet, and I never thought I'd ever find them in real life. The story started, me and Brad were on a scouting trip, and you know, another place we'd never been to, so we're going to a bunch of different places just trying to see what they have. And it was around, I think it was like Tuesday at like 3 in the morning in this like really crappy casino. I walked down in the basement, which I knew was like just all slot machines, video poker machines. Walked by this particular bank of video poker machines that was, it was a dollar machine, and I saw that the Royal was at 12,000 coins. So, I mean, having played video poker in the past, I knew that, you know, unless the pay table is really bad, this is likely a plus EV situation. So I was like, all right, I'm a little closer at this.
For non-video poker players, that adds approximately 4% to whatever the starting EV was.
Right. So I start looking at the pay table, and the first thing I realize is that not only is the Royal progressive, the straight flush was normal, but the four, this was a double-double bonus game. The four aces with kicker was also progressive. And when I looked at it, this one was at 6,000. So people that know the normal dollar game, this should be at 2,000. So it was about three times higher. So now I'm like, wow, I mean, this machine is cold. This thing hasn't hit for a long time. And I look at the next pay table, or the next payout, and that's the four, two, threes, fours with kicker. And that was at around 2,000. That's about 2.5 times higher than it's supposed to be. So I plug this, I have like the Wizard Video Poker app on my phone, and type in the pay table, and it shows 112%. I'm like, all right, I know video poker, I gotta be doing something wrong here. I'm like, Brad, come over and look at this, like, type this into your phone, like, tell me what you get. 112,000. I was like, okay, maybe this machine is just really cold. Like, we looked at the meter, you know, there was a progressive meter on this thing too. It was around 1%. So we're like, I mean, maybe this is just a really cold machine. You know, this is 3 a.m, so I'm like, all right, let's sleep for a few hours. We'll come back and play this in the morning. So we come back at 8 a.m. Right, I'll let you take it from there.
Right, so, I mean, you know, we played video poker before, so, like, we basically made a pact that it was, like, we're going to camp this thing until, you know, we hit something, and it's not with playing anymore, you know. It could be 10 minutes, or it could be, you know, based off of how the machine looked, it could have been weeks that we were sitting there. Luckily for us, Andrew was lucky that day. So I think, man, I don't know, it might maybe an hour in, Andrew hit the progressive royal. So, you know, we were ecstatic. You know, we only had to be here for an hour. You know, we were good to go. We can cash out our $12,000 and bail. But, you know, we're up $12,000. This is great. So, you know, we got paid and everything. But we were confused because the... So, you know, it was a progressive royal. And the royal had reset like it does once the progressive is hit. But instead of resetting down to $4,000, where it should have been on for a $1 machine, it was reset down to $12,000.
So at this point, we're really confused.
Right. So
happy, I mean, but confused.
Right. You say sweet, but you've never seen two guys second-guessing themselves more than we were at that point in time. You know, we were like, basically, it's like this. There's no way this is correct, right? Like, either we typed in the numbers wrong, like, we got to relook at this pay table, like, did we make sure that everything was what it was supposed to be? And it was.
So while I was waiting to get paid, there was actually another local. There was three machines on this bank. There was another local playing next to us. So I, like, subtly hinted to her. I'm kind of like, you know, do you know what's going on here? Like, this thing is supposed to usually reset to, like, 4,000. She looks up at me. She's like, smiles a little bit. She's like, I don't ask questions around here, and goes back to her machine. So it was really, it was great that she was there, because we were like, okay, like, these guys just really messed up somewhere here. So at that point, we had a lot of confidence that we're just like, all right, well, we're extending our trip to infinity here until this thing goes away.
Or they make you go away.
Exactly, yeah.
Just for my not being a video poker player.
Sure.
This is a dollar machine, and you bet $5 a spin?
Right. Yep.
So I'm just trying to figure out what this is worth per hour. I mean, I don't know how many spins you play per hour.
If it's a fast machine, you can get $5,000 per hour. A slower machine is $3,000. Was this fast?
Yeah, it was fast. We were probably doing around 900 hands an hour.
But you're kind of also at the bane of your success, because with those progressive payouts at $2,000, $6,000, and $12,000, you know, the W2Gs, the hand pays, they really start hindering you with the hands per hour as well.
Well, okay, so even assuming $4,000 an hour, if it's a 12% advantage, is $480?
Yeah.
Well, there's a 1% meter in there, too.
Yeah. So it's
I'll buy that number.
Okay, I would work for that.
Yeah, it's not bad, right?
Well, especially if you can just sit there and grind it for days on end.
Right. With that advantage baked in, it's almost like a mindless task, too. You know, it's not like we were overly concerned about playing perfectly when you have that much, you know, margin of error baked in, right?
So, right.
Like, our strategy was totally like, we're going to play until we are falling asleep every day from here on out, essentially, right?
Yep. So we ended up playing for about 3 days. We actually became victims of our own success. I think we hit five royals, three in the first day, a bunch of the other top payouts. So there was actually another gentleman that showed up and played one of the other machines with us. He won like 20,000 in a day. So it came to a point over 3 days where these machines had hemorrhaged a lot of money. And something must have popped up on the casino manager's report that, you know, these machines have been just getting crushed the last few days. And by the third day, we noticed a very noticeable change in demeanor. Among, you know, the employees, like, they went from being, like, very accommodative, very, like, friendly, to, like, not talking to us at all. Not really saying hi, not really helping us. And so we knew that, like, they were suspicious, something was up. And me and Brad were playing there, and, on the third day, and a slot tech came by and just shut down the third machine and said nothing to us. And so it was at that point, we're like, all right, this is probably about to come to an end here. And so, like, we're going to play this until they kick us off. we're not getting up from these machines. By this point, we had actually called in another friend to help us, you know, just keep grinding these machines because this thing is not going to last forever.
You didn't have my phone number?
I did not have your phone number, Bob. Sorry.
Okay.
So anyways, we actually ended up getting a full 24 hours of play in after that first machine got put out of service. And finally, they came up to us and they were like, hey, guys, we got to do some maintenance on these machines. You guys need to get up.
Air quotes.
So we knew at that point that it was pretty much over. But it was it's one of those things you never expect to find, and it speaks a lot to just, like, having a lot of knowledge about all the games in the casino, and if you're scouting a place, you want to be checking.
And taking the time to go down the basement and look
right,
at the games
sure.
and the, you know, where you know there's,
right.
you know, yeah.
I mean, we like to play table games whenever possible, and so it would have been really easy for us, you know, it was 3 a.m. to just, like, we don't need to go down there, like, let's just go out to the next place or something. But we're obviously very thankful that we did.
Yeah, yeah. Scouting.
Scouting video poker is tough. You can have a machine with 3 or 4 different denominations on it and 12 games per denomination, and the games can vary by denomination. And it's a long time to check even one machine. So there can be a row of machines, and they may or may not be identical. You can assume they are, but they're not. On the third machine over, on the dollar game of this, something else is wrong. And so when you're waiting for a hand pay on a jackpot somewhere, be checking the other machines. This is not idle time. This is busy time. 'Cause be checking what you find on nearby machines, because you never know when that mistake is there. Certainly the newer the casino is, the more chances there are mistakes. But take time to check. Okay, Richard, we got more or less a minute to go. If people want to hear our show, what are the best ways to do it?
First of all, you can get a hold of us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. You can find us on facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. You can listen to past episodes at richardmunchkin.com, bobdancer.com. You can find us. If you want to get the show delivered to you so you don't have to work to get it, you can sign up at my site or at Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube. I'm now on Twitter. I've joined the 21st century at RWM21. So yeah, my tweets are not about, you know, I'm going to go eat a bagel now. Usually they have something to do with the show. So, yeah, you can connect to us that way.
All right, good. So, at this exact moment, we don't know who our guest will be, for next week, but I guarantee you as one possibility will be Anthony Curtis.
Right, the new coupon book is out. So,
and there's one other guest that we're waiting to hear from. It'll be a great show. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Andrew and Brad.
Thanks for having us.
Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.